Jonathan, in many of the stories that we do here and have done over the years, have involved hospitals that have been reluctant to admit mistakes, and that's basically where you come in, or your firm comes in, to eventually prove that mistakes were made and hopefully maybe get an admission by the hospital or doctors that mistakes were made. Now, we understand that there seems to be some reverse psychology going on here, that some hospitals, not all, but some are now beginning to admit their mistakes, and as it turns out, by doing so, are able to see how the mistakes were made, evaluate what happened, and reduce the possibility of avoidable mistakes in the future.
Well,
did I oversimplify it?
No. And in fact, there is a story out of Nashville, Tennessee, to that effect. I can tell you that over the last 38 years that I have practiced medical malpractice law, representing people injured at the hands of medicine, better known as the plaintiff, I have not seen a great deal of that. That's not a negative statement where the hospitals are concerned or where the physicians are concerned, but I have not, I'm just making the comment, I have not seen a great deal of that. I will say it did happen within the last 6 months. I had a lovely woman come to me complaining that she underwent cervical spine surgery, neck surgery, and after the surgery was over, the surgeon came in and told her that he had operated on the wrong level. So, one, he didn't fix the problem, and two, he created a new set of problems, and three, she would need to be operated upon again, and he admitted it. That happens almost never in my personal experience. This article out of Nashville really doesn't say much, other than in order to deal with the mistakes, you have to admit that you've made them.
And admission, though, doesn't eliminate liability.
They're not even necessarily, I don't know who they're admitting it to. You know, they don't come out to the families. I've had very few physicians, surgeons, or hospitals come out and admit to anyone that they did anything wrong. And the releases that we sign, meaning when the doctor or the hospital settles a case voluntarily and decides not to take it to court to try and defend it, each of the releases I've seen, thousands of them, I would guess, indicate specifically that the defendants do not admit any wrongdoing. Specifically says that. I've had clients ask me that for years. Why does it say that in here? They're paying me $500,000.
Right.
Because they don't.
So it's unusual, to say the least. But obviously, it's being done. You mentioned some hospitals in Tennessee.
Right.
And how did it work out for them?
Well, it seems that they're trying to change the culture. This article that we've read, which is very interesting, comments that they had a three-week-old infant in their neonatal, meaning brand-new baby, intensive care unit, who died when a nurse confused a feeding line with an intravenous line. And she probably put the food through the IV line and killed the baby. Well, great. Now you have to fix that. And so they did. And they changed to color-coded tubing that would not cross-connect to prevent nurses from doing that again. I think that's very important. That's one of the functions we serve. When we sue people for making mistakes through negligence, one of the byproducts we hope to achieve is that that doctor, that physician, and that hospital will not do the same thing they just did again. They'll find a way to develop protocols and safety valves and redundant systems, like you like to say, Frank, to prevent another occurrence like that.
But normally, do they do that, or are they just?
I think
is just part of whatever the payout is just part of doing business.
I think they try and do it. I think one of the beneficial effects of bringing a meritorious medical negligence case is the hospitals try to change their protocols if there is a way to do it to prevent it from happening again. A lot of the hospitals are making efforts to change their protocols in medications because medication mistakes are the biggest source of malpractice that I've seen. You have the wrong patient or the wrong dosage or the wrong medication. You have three ways to foul this up. Right?
Right.
Well, they're making efforts. I mean, some of them are going to computer programs. Some of them are having robotic technology to mix their solutions in the pharmacies, which means robots do it, not people. Some of them are starting to use barcodes on the prescriptions and the patients.
I
and
like
if the barcodes
that.
Don't match, the patient doesn't get the tendered prescription.
I haven't really seen too many mistakes on barcodes for some reason or another.
Me neither. And so they are. The hospitals are making an effort. There's no question about it. But by the same token, the Institute of Medicine tells us, and it's not an institute of lawyers. These are institutes made up of physicians and surgeons. They tell us that 98,000 Americans die in hospitals every year due to malpractice. That's just dying in the hospital, not being injured. And that's not people dying or being injured outside the hospital, doctor's offices and the procedure areas, the dentist's office, whatever. So there's a lot of work to be done. I am hopeful that the physicians, surgeons, and the hospitals are going to do more to change the culture and come to an injured patient and admit the wrongdoing.
And I think there's some color codes and things of that nature they're talking about.
Yes, they're talking about color coding, even the tubing.
Mm-hmm.
So that one color would be for a food line and one color would be for an IV, and one line won't even fit the other, the different gauges.
Well,
that would help.
That would help, too. And
sure.
I think you did mention, too, that they're installing robots or robotic technology now.
That's correct.
To mix the medicines.
Yes, yeah. To mix the medicines, hoping that the computer-driven robots do better than we do.
Now, with all this that was done, at least in the hospitals in Tennessee, the bottom line was a better performance overall?
They would like to think so. I don't think it's been proven yet. It's too new.
Too new?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be years before we know whether any of these efforts pay off. I think there are things that the hospitals and physicians and surgeons can do to significantly decrease the incidence of malpractice. We have to just wait and see.
Here's something interesting, too, looking over your shoulder there. It's both the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and private insurers have put hospitals on notice that they will no longer pick up the tab when mistakes increase patient stays or lead to readmissions. Now, they can do that, I guess, with Medicare and Medicaid, but what about private insurers? Can they do that with private insurers as well? Can they say basically, to the private insurers, look, we're not going to pay for your mistakes anymore?
They can try and do that, and that would help, because we all know, all of us know, that hospitals, surgeons, physicians, all red-blooded Americans react to financial incentives.
Sure.
And if the federal government comes to a hospital and says, if we find that the patient stayed in the hospital longer or required more expensive treatment, is brain injured or whatever happened to require all this expensive treatment due to malpractice, we're not going to pay you.
Right.
And that is a really good incentive, a fabulous incentive to have the hospitals try to do better.
As they say, money talks. And changes things.
Yeah. Well, we know the hospital administrations, and we understand that the hospitals are doing the best they can within reality to try and help. But we also know that there are certain financial incentives that work against changing some things. For example, if you had a doctor or a series of doctors, a group in your hospital that was a huge profit center for the hospital, okay, making lots of money, but you were having some troubles with that doctor, you'd probably want to keep that group around.
Sure.
Because they're making money. It's called a profit center. Whereas if they came to the administration and said, we want to put in a fully computerized medication prescription system for, pick a number, $500,000 or whatever it would cost. I'm just guessing. I don't know. And it's not any kind of a profit center. The hospital doesn't make a nickel doing it. There's no financial incentive to do it.
Well, speaking of financial incentives, what about bonuses for doctors, hospitals, and what have you that go through the course of a year with a rather minimal number of mistakes to begin with?
I think it's a fabulous idea. The only problem in this country is who's going to pay it? Who pays the bonuses? Where does the money come from?
The patients. The insurances that they have.
I don't know. I'd love to see. Nobody gives me a bonus for anything, so...
Well, it's like, paying kids to go to school,
Yeah, I haven't tried that.
they do that in some places.
I haven't tried that.
They pay them, to go to school and not be absent for a year or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Well, we are a capitalist society here.
Right.
I mean, my daughter's 35, my son's 30, a little late for me to start paying him to go to school.
Right, go to school.
Now we pay him for other things.
Right. That'll never cease.
I've been told.
You've been listening to 1-800-LAW-CALL. Please remember that proper legal advice depends on a complete analysis of all facts and circumstances. The legal advice given during this program is intended as general information only, and no attorney-client relationship is created with callers or listeners to this program. If you were unable to have your question answered during today's program, you can call 1-800-LAW-CALL at any time, day or night, and select option 2 to arrange a free and private conversation with a member of the law firm of Shakur, Federico, and Staten. Numerically, that's 1-800-529-2255.